This is oral history number 2, Bessie Hyman and Eleanor Cohn, again at the home of Margaret Lipson, asking her for more information. Margaret, is there anything you had forgotten when we last talked that you would like to add?
There's one thing that I think would be especially interesting to a council oral history. You had asked me about things that I might remember about the Depression, and one of the very interesting things that I remember had to do with the council, really, as well as the Depression. When I was in high school, between 1922 and 26, my mother had organized a council section in Aliquippa. She had come to know council because we had, as I think I've mentioned before, one of the Southwestern District religious schools in Aliquippa. And through this, she came to know council and its work and decided that Aliquippa really should have a council section. She proceeded to organize it, but said that she ought not to be the president. It ought to be a younger woman, and it ought to be a younger woman who did not speak with an accent as she did. And so she recruited a bride of 1 year to be the first president of the council section, Bailey Jacobson.
When was this?
Sometime between 1922 and 1926. I know that it was when I was in high school. And
during the Depression or before?
No, this
Depression?
Was before the Depression. I was merely leading up to the incident in the Depression. And when I came back to Aliquippa to teach after I was graduated from the University of Pittsburgh, my first 3 years I taught in our junior high school. And that was 1930 to 1933. Which was, of course, in the depths of the Depression. And as a teacher there, I observed that many of our children were hungry. And one day I said to my mother, "You know, Mother, I think it would be a good idea for your women, and they don't need to limit themselves to just the council women, but they might get others if they can, some of the church women, if your women were to organize a lunch program in our junior high school." We had no cafeteria there. And I said, "If you could get women to volunteer to come in 1 day a week, different ones every day, and cook a hot meal for those children, you would really be performing a great mitzvah. And maybe you could get some of the grocers to contribute the food." And they did do that. I don't remember for how long, but for quite a long time, hot meals were served at noon in that school to all and any of the children who wanted to go and eat. And I can assure you that most of them did. So, see, that council program was in Aliquippa, too. Another one of the items that I think I forgot to mention when you asked me what I had been doing. In 1960, I was appointed to the by the governor of Pennsylvania to the group of delegates to the national White House Conference on Children and Youth, and also I was a chairman of the Subcommittee on Education in the Allegheny County Committee for the White House Conference on Children and Youth. It was an extremely interesting experience for me. I don't know how much good came of it. because, as a matter of fact, a year later, and then again several years later, we did a survey here in Allegheny County that Allegheny County Committee did, and I was responsible for the survey on education to see which of the recommendations that had been made at the conference had been implemented. And I must say I didn't find too much in the field of education that had been done, but I'm sure eventually some of the recommendations
were implemented.
Did you find anything? I don't remember what. There was some slight, people were stretching it, that they did find. But as I think back, I think the feeling I had was that not too much had yet come of it. That was pretty early, you must remember, a year after the conference, and maybe 2 years later, three. It was a little bit early, I suppose, to measure any progress that had been made as a result of that conference.
Was there anything else about yourself that you think would be of interest in this oral history?
No, I can't think of anything in particular that I want to say. There were a great many things, as was true of all of the lives of all of us, as you know, but nothing that
Margaret, we would have liked to have interviewed Sylvan, but of course, unfortunately, he died before we had a chance. Could you tell us some of the things that Sylvan had done that would be of interest?
Well, just before we started with the tape recorder, I was saying something about I had talked so much, but now you're going to get me started on Sylvan, and I'm afraid that's another whole long. I don't know when I could stop to tell you talking about what a fine man he was. Well, let me start out by saying he really was a Pittsburgher. He was born here. And all his schooling was in Pittsburgh, elementary school, high school, Schenley High School, University of Pittsburgh undergraduate work, and University of Pittsburgh Law School. I suppose that the overall word for Sylvan was that he really believed in justice. Believed in the law as a means for getting justice for everyone. And the work that he did as a lawyer all the way through was the kind of work that had to do with getting justice for everyone. Sylvan was really a student. He was a scholar. He was very bright, and he achieved all the way through school. Up through law school, where he was at the top of the class with Maurice Lewick, and to this day I don't know which one was number one and which two. At any rate, they were very close whichever way it went. And this scholarly attitude of his persisted until the day he died, really. He was always very... Each time that he undertook a new phase of the law in his practice, he had to study all over again. For instance, the first facet of law business that he did was labor law, and he really became an expert in that and was so recognized. Then at some point, through his labor connections, he became a negligence attorney because he worked for the railroad unions, and of course a good bit of that work was through the FELA laws, which was, you know, compensation for injuries sustained on the job and so on. And he had to make a study of that facet of law, and he became an expert in that. And then he later on became the general counsel for the Allegheny County Redevelopment Authority, and this was a whole new area in the law, and he became an expert on that.
What year was that?
let's see.
Approximately.
I could tell you exactly. He retired from that position in 1973, July 1973, and he had been with them for 15 years. So 15 from 73, Bessie, you're a good mathematician, whatever that year was, that's when he started. So he was really a student all the time. He really studied. He was also, he set very high standards in his work. He was very particular about briefs. He worked on them as though they were literary pieces of work. And he felt very keenly about this, that briefs had to read well, and they had to be correctly written. While he was general counsel for the Redevelopment Authority, he had several younger attorneys under him. And one time, one of them said to me, while he was still counsel and while the young man was still working for him in Allegheny County Redevelopment Authority, said to me one time, he said, "You know, your husband, you can't please him. You can't ever satisfy him. When he gives me an assignment and tells me what has to be done in the brief and so on, and he said, I work really hard at it, and I bring it to him, and he sits there and he looks at it and he frowns and he shakes his head from side to side and he says, no, this isn't right and this isn't right and you'll have to do better with this and you'll have to write this better. And he gives it back to me and I go back and I work on it the way he says to do it and I come back and he says, well, it's still not quite right. Okay, give it to me. I'll take it and we'll see what we can do with it." And he was like that. He was he set very high standards. As a matter of fact, in everything. He set high standards for his children, too. I'll never forget when Robert, who had done his undergraduate work at Cornell, but who came to the University of Pittsburgh for his law work, finished his first semester here. I remember he came home at the end of the first semester one day, one evening, and said to me, I was in the kitchen, he said, "Mother, I have my grades." And he handed them to me, and he said, "My rank is, I don't remember now, it was sixth or seventh, seventh." I said, "Oh, isn't that fine, Robert? Oh, that's fine. When your father comes home, be sure to show it to him right away." Wasn't very long before Sylvan did come home, and Robert said, "Oh, Dad, I've got my grades and my rank in class here for my first semester," and he handed it to Sylvan. And Sylvan looked at it and said, "Well, don't feel bad. Don't worry, Robert. You'll do better next semester." And Robert was really shocked, and I really remonstrated with Sylvan and said, "Sylvan, how can you be like that?" "Oh," he said, "well, I thought that, you know, that he was feeling bad about not being a higher rank." He was really he was a very idealistic man, too. He really, really had high ideals. He thought that we ought always to strive for the ideal, and that's what he worked for in his work with civil liberties and civil rights groups. And even though he knew that it was a long, hard row that he had to hoe and that he wouldn't always be successful, as he wasn't, that he still had to work at it.
After 73, did he practice any other type of law after he retired?
Oh, after he retired from the Allegheny County Council the Allegheny County Redevelopment Authority, he went back to his own general practice. And general practice is what it was. He had He had some labor unions, and he did some work in the field of, I guess it was the other side of the coin to what he'd been doing at the Redevelopment Authority. The work he got was work from people who had property that had been condemned and taken over, and so he did some of that. He had some, just a general practice, and as a matter of fact, that year, which was his last year of life, he was busier than he'd ever been before, which never ceased to amaze me, because I thought, here he is, 65, and busier than ever and doing better than he ever had in his own, you know, law practice.
Was he interested in politics or civic affairs or charitable?
That's one of the things about Sylvan. He always believed that everybody had an obligation to work for the community. He felt that we all owed something to the community in which we lived. He practiced that himself, and he wanted his wife and his children to practice that too. He started out, and he was interested in politics too, as a matter of fact. When he was graduated from law school, one of the first things that he did was campaign for Franklin Roosevelt. In those days, when we didn't have television, they used to do a lot of campaigning on street corners. And I remember distinctly that he used to make speeches, sometimes outdoors in that way, sometimes that he was on the list of speakers, campaign speakers, and was sent various places to meetings, you know, in halls and so on. And he truly believed in the things that Franklin Roosevelt said needed to be done. He really was a New Dealer. And this kind of social reform he always did believe in and work for. He was a Democrat as far as party goes, but the important thing was not that he was that kind of Democrat. He really was a Democrat with a small d. He believed in equality for people, he believed in justice, and he worked for that. He was one of the charter members of and later chairman of the Allegheny County Council on Civil Rights. He was the, I'm sure that you remember the McCarthy period, and during that time the American Civil Liberties Union really had problems. He was one of those who had absolutely faded here in Pittsburgh in the 1940s, but he was one of three people, I believe, who started, there were only about three of them, who got busy and reorganized an American Civil Liberties Union chapter.
Do you remember the names of the other two?
Mm-mm. No, I don't. I'm sorry. He was one of the charter members and later was also chairman of the Americans for Democratic Action here in Pittsburgh. And that one, too, after the 1952 presidential campaign, when Adlai Stevenson lost, as you know, the ADA chapter here in Pittsburgh had really come to a very low stage in its life, and there were some, and I remember one person especially, there were only six of us at this meeting, and some who thought, you know, forget it and write the close to the chapter here. And this one man in particular, who was hailed by some people in the community as a great liberal and who fancied himself as a great liberal, I'm not going to mention any names, got up there and said, "I'm a very tired liberal and I think we should bring an end to this chapter." But Sylvan absolutely would not let them do it. He kept arguing, and he could be very stubborn, Sylvan, and he was in this particular instance, and they did continue. And he became the chairman a couple of years after that, and really got the chapter going again. And your question was really also, did he believe in working in the community? Yes, in the Jewish community too. He was a member of the Jewish Community Relations Council. It was then an independent council, not a part of the Federation as a committee, although it got support from the Federation at that time too. He was a member of that council for some years and chairman too. And then he became a member of the National Jewish Community Relations Advisory Council and an officer.
What office?
I think he was treasurer. And this was one of the, he never was one for going to too many conventions or anything of that sort, but this was one national annual convention that he did go to. As a matter of fact, he went to the one just 2 weeks before he died, too.
What years was he an officer?
I don't know the exact year, but it was recently. It was in the 70s.